welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another very interesting, I think it's going to be a great show, dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and other related areas and sometimes unrelated. How's that? And tonight I thought we'd talk about, now this sounds like a strange title, but it's called, I'm calling it Power and Evil. Now, you might say, well, how come you didn't say God? You usually put God in there or something. Well, you know, if we're talking about power and evil, of course, God is going to come in, I think, somewhere. But it's important tonight to recognize I'm not talking about power in total. I'm talking about power as it relates to evil and how evil relates to power. But at the same time, I will be explaining pretty much right after I tell you what I'm going to do, what I mean by power and the difference between evil in power and power in general. Because there's a really significant difference, and that's what part of really people don't understand, especially when we're talking about evil, is evil's relationship to power. And if you're ready to really get a full-blown understanding of this, this is the night to get it. If you've read about some of my articles or the books on evil, it may help you because you'll say, oh, I know about that because he said this or that, and that makes kind of a sense. Some of you really don't know anything about this subject area, and that's okay because I'm going to go over it pretty good. And when we're done, you know, we got a two-hour show. I love that. And I think we're going to have a pretty good understanding of all this. And the thing about it is that it also prepares people for what I think is an increase in potential evil in the world in the next couple of years. So this is sort of like, you know, a little tutoring on understanding evil and how it functions, because it functions through power. It actually, most people think of human beings as functioning through what I call consciousness, and because human beings have a self, and that the self provides us with consciousness. And so we're kind of very different than the lower kingdoms in that we have self-consciousness, we can have consciousness of others, and even consciousness of God, which is great. But evil isn't so much about consciousness. It has some, but it mostly deals with its existence and the existence that it tries to spread through power rather than through developing consciousness. And power is a very, very interesting concept. So let me start off by talking about that, and then we can go further. Power is really part of the third part of our Creator's mind, of God's mind. It's in that part. Now you might say, well, what does that mean? Okay. If we talk about the third part, the big picture of the third part of God's mind is to have a universe in which there is interaction. In other words, one part of the part that's growing it, which we call life, can interact with another part freely, by the way, interact with another part and do so by developing eventually consciousness in the process. It's really a great system because the three whole parts work together. The two parts of God's mind are freedom and consciousness together that come before power and come before interactions. And then God says, well, in order for there to be this growth of these two parts, which we call spirit or spiritual, in order for spirit to grow, me to grow, my mind to grow, my thoughts to grow, then there needs to be a method of doing that, and that method is to interact. One life interacts with another life, and it's a wonderful thing, and it develops this third part of God's mind. And you might say, well, where does the power then come into? Power is the changing of energy from one form to another. And energy is part of the process of how life interacts. So if you don't have energy in where most of the universe exists, the part of the universe that has interaction as a focus, which is the five lowest dimensions of time and space, where everybody basically thinks that life actually exists. There is some kind of life above that, but that kind of life is beyond and is already, we'll say, unified to some extent or completely separated from, in some extent, from interacting with other life. It's beyond interacting because it actually is connected directly. But let's forget about that for right now. And let's stay with where we're familiar. Where we're familiar, in order for us to interact, in order for us to act or interact, we need to use the changing of energy from one state to another that develops power. Power is not a bad thing because we've got to use it in this universe. It's one. We call it even the word physical sometimes is employed. Why it's a universe that's based upon what we loosely use the term physical. The real dimension of physicality is the basement part of the universe where we are right now. And there's no part of the universe that is more exemplifying the concept of power than the lowest part where we are. Because here it's obvious that in order to do anything, it requires significant levels of power. And, of course, most people are shaking their heads and saying, sure, I got that. Everybody knows that. Yeah, right. Okay. So power is really part of God's plan. It's not like outside someplace we don't want to have anything to do with, because the plan of God is to have life grow and interact through interaction, and that will create more of God if that life chooses to think pretty much like God. Not exactly, but to add to God's thought as well, and to do some really wonderful, great things. It's terrific. Now, we have the freedom to not do that. We have the freedom to think in different ways from God. And so that kind of puts a little wrinkle into the situation, because for the beings who are choosing to think away from God, even say God doesn't exist in part of their thought, and to then seek to interact, their method of using power is considerably different. In God's plan, the method of using power is to grow more of being a part of God, which is great. Virtue, we call it virtue. Spirit in the form itself that we're existing in, and it's terrific. It's sort of like compounding the energy with spirit and getting more back than you put in. It's a great system. But for those beings that have convinced themselves that God is not the way, and that have taken a darker path, a very dark path in some circumstances, their use of power is usually to limit the amount of interaction of others for the benefit of their having both more power to further limit others. It's sort of a growing art, you might say, and to have more form things, particularly in the physical world where we exist. Although these things can also exist in other dimensions, like the lower astral realm. And so you could even have a similar kind of system existing in another dimension beyond this one of time and space. And so here is the interesting point about this. Evil seeks power for almost the opposite reason that God created power. Okay, so God creates power so that life can interact to grow more of God, and the life become a greater part of that growth. That's a wonderful idea. But evil the side that doesn't want to have anything to do with God and wants maybe to destroy God or certainly convince others that God doesn't exist, whether they can convince themselves is another story, they're seeking to use power to separate themselves from God, to control and separate themselves from even other life, and to remove power from other life so that they have more and more control over other life. Now you might say, well, what are they going to get out of that in the long run? Well, what they think they're getting out of it, this is going to sound bizarre, is freedom from God. It's bizarre, huh? Yeah, they're getting freedom from God, but the ultimate end of the process is they lose almost all their freedom entirely, both from God and from everything. And I'll explain that, of course, during tonight's show. So this is such a strange system. Power and evil kind of are a toxic mix, and evil lives to gain power to control others and to attempt, if it so chooses, to destroy God or to try to avoid God at the least. So this is the process that evil is involved in. And those who are darkening themselves, meaning that they're leaving spiritual thought and their soul aside, they're saying, okay, I don't want anything more to do with my soul, I want to do less of my soul, I want to live a darker life. They are moving towards this system of wanting control. Now you could say, well, what the heck is going on in human beings? Because evil only exists below the human kingdom by it being imposed through human thought in some way. So you might say, then how is it that this sort of craziness kind of develops? Because it is kind of a crazy thing. And how come they don't know in the long run they're going to lose their freedom? Because I said so, but I'll explain why, of course. And how come they don't understand that if they're really fighting God, that God must exist? Well, they convince themselves that either God is irrelevant, if it does exist, or its relevancy is only for those who do not have the power that they seek, that the evil ones or darker ones that are moving towards evil seek. This is a kind of upside-down system for sure. And it's one that we have to be extremely cognizant of and careful about, because most people who are seeking goodness in the world are not simultaneously giving up that goodness to get power. And they don't notice in the immediate sense that there are people who are living for the sake of gaining and functioning in power. And this is one of the secrets about evil. Evil knows that. Evil has knowledge. Evil is sly and cunning. And it knows that those that are seeking a balance in consciousness and the use of power to co-create more with their creator are pretty oblivious to the darkness and evil that moves towards seeking power and towards being effectively, in the long run, a very, very destructive force against whatever power and whatever consciousness that goodness and those, the vast, vast majority of life and people are exercising. Okay, now let me explain how this problem arises, because it's not easy for us to understand it, and it's important to, because we won't be able to see it if we don't understand it. And so what I just told you is evil is pretty much invisible to most people. We just don't get it because we don't function the same way. And it's hard for us to understand even those that we can see it functioning in, because it it makes no sense. It's kind of like, well, why would they want to do that? You know, that doesn't make any sense. So here's the problem, and it has to do with the need of our soul to create an autonomous being that is free to choose without being a puppet of the soul, just the way God has the same thing with all life. It's really just a replication of the thought of God with some wrinkles in it, and we'll talk about those too. And by the way, speaking of talking, if you want to, and you're listening in, you know you can call in at any time, so you have that option. Let me go through this and see if I can explain this in a way that kind of makes sense. And that is that here's the soul. The soul wants to create a being to go into the lower monastic or mental worlds, the astral world, and start its existence in the physical world, where we are right now. And it wants us to go there to be a creator, co-creator with our God or God with the creator, but at the same time, to be a co-creator with our soul, which is in the higher monastic world, and can't come here. I'm going to explain why. Can't come here, so it's got to create a being that's going to be here. And that being has to have some autonomy, because the soul cannot be here with us. Why? Because it developed the same senses that it helps to create to make us human. Those senses become unusually corrupted and affected by the very dense energies of these lower worlds, which the soul knows very little about and has a great deal of trouble understanding. And it literally would become us if it came here, because we become what is called illusioned. We no longer, once we incarnate in this realm, we become existent here. Many people just say, well, I call it born. Okay, you can call it born. That's fine. I don't care. That's an okay word. You're born here, and then you say, but the information that comes in is distorted. And you can say, well, why is it distorted? It's distorted because the energy is so powerful. Okay, there's that word again. So powerful. And we have so little understanding of how to use it in ways that are beneficial and helpful towards others as we interact with them, that the majority of the energy isn't used correctly. It's really a lack of understanding or consciousness that causes this. And so it clogs our senses. It literally clogs them up. And the sense that does come through, which is another, you know, it's like the better part of energy actually coming through, the better parts, supposedly telling us about our environment. It's a good thing. But the part that comes through is very distorted or illusioned because of the clocks. And our personality, the part of us that is really subconscious to our conscious self, is just overwhelmed with the amount of information. It's overwhelmed, and it can't process it properly, so it creates incomplete knowledge that is often wrong. It's not because the personality is a bad thing, but it's the best that we have as a controlling agent while we're developing our consciousness in ourselves. And until we develop our consciousness, really until about age 28 years of age, many people say, oh, isn't it 21? No, it's actually 28. We're continuing to work on developing consciousness. Until we develop enough consciousness, we really can't work it out, because the self is the conscious part of us that needs to supersede and take over from the subconscious personal side of who we are, the personality, and really take over to process a lot more of the information, makes us way, way, way more understanding of the knowledge that we do create, and it also helps our personality to create much better knowledge, because now we're able to handle more of the information at a faster rate, and we're able to use the information in ways that becomes very interconnected, so that the knowledge that the personality produces can now be used to become a creator of more and more understanding of the universe, our fellow people in other life forms, and of God. It's a wonderful system. That's how it's supposed to work. We, particularly the humans on Earth right now, are pretty young in this process, because the souls of us have not had much experience in the kind of world that Earth is. There are some worlds our souls might be great at, but they came here because they want to help contribute to the growth of God on a planet that's pretty darn tough. It's tough because the majority, the vast majority of humanity, and other life forms even lower than humanity, have developed only rudimentary forms of consciousness that have many, many problems inherent in them. Earth is kind of like one of the toughest places to develop consciousness in, partly because it's following this path of power. And it's kind of an experiment to see how much power can humans really eventually use in ways that develop positive, virtuous interactions with each other and with other parts of life all at the same time, hopefully. So this is a great experiment. And at the present time, we're not doing real good. I would say Earth is on the brink, possibly, of not being able to carry out the full experiment in such a very powerful realm. And so power is really the hallmark of power is a thing called the third type of energy, which is the third ray for those people who know what that word. It just means the same thing, third type of energy. And Earth is a third ray focused planet in primitive development. It's more developed than it was 1,000 years ago, but it's still considered primitive by most people's standards. And it's the place where evil can grow the fastest, in virtually in comparison to almost any other planet in the universe. There are a few that might be equal to. There may be one or two that might be somewhat worse, but that's very, 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 very low numbers for billions and billions and billions of habitable planets in the physical dimension. So the scary thing about it is we're really at the top of that curve, or the bottom of it, if you want to look at it from an opposite side. As far as the ability to use power in ways that are constructive and works with consciousness instead of against it. So this is our dilemma. We're here because we want to be, because our souls want us to be, and that's part of us, really. And yet, it's the most difficult place we can be. It's the place where if evil is going to develop, and almost anywhere in the universe, it's going to be right here. Holy cow. And we're highly susceptible to becoming possessed by evil. Highly. But not very many people actually ever do become possessed by it. And the strange thing about it is those who get possessed are not the ones who are necessarily the most retarded. The weird thing about this is, in order to be the highest level of evil, you need to have some significant, but not the highest by any stretch, levels of knowledge and at least a moderate related level of consciousness. Not very high compared to really highly conscious people, but enough to get yourself into pretty big trouble. And so we don't find those who have the least knowledge and who are least conscious seeking to develop this relationship of power the way really evil people do. But we're going to cover different shades of this whole process tonight. So So it's not going to be just on again, on or off. It's going to be, we're going to be looking at this from different levels. But nonetheless, if we're just talking in general, the people who are the darker dudes are usually the better educated, the people with sometimes significant levels of wealth, and who have not the lowest of consciousness. Sometimes they have significant levels of consciousness, but the need for control is so great that they ignore even their, we'll say, other side of themselves that tells them that what they're doing is wrong. And they live for power. They want power. Now, I'm going to tell you something about the most evil of people so that you understand how they function. And some of you already know this if you've read, like, Life's Hidden Meaning, because there's a whole section in one of the chapters about it. But evil is not some nebulous nothing. It is actually a, you can call it, a consciousness in itself. And it exists in one of the earliest of the galaxies. Ours is not one of the earliest galaxies. It's one of the later ones. And that particular galaxy was the first, this is the source of evil, was the first galaxy to really go the wrong way. Now, it doesn't mean that the whole galaxy, as it originally existed, went the wrong way. It actually split itself apart. And the evil part of that galaxy, as a galaxy in itself, is now entirely, as a galaxy, evil. But its original, we'll call it, fullness, in its original fullness, that the rest of it has gone on and developed itself in goodness. So there's this evil-like sub-galaxy, but it's this galaxy in itself. It's not anywhere near a very big galaxy at this point. It's filled with evil. And you could say, well, what does that mean? You know, it means that all of the human life form, and there's nothing beyond human life form. There are no higher beings beyond human life form in this particular place. All of the human life form in the galaxy, that's a pretty big amount, even though it's a small galaxy, is at present in a hierarchy of evil thought. And they work together not just from a single planetary scale, but they have joined whole star systems together with planets becoming an evil entity. So the shades of Star Wars, I guess, maybe. And some of their thought is able to travel from that particular location, which is very far, far away. I got another pun in Star Wars. And it really is able to connect with any evil being, possibly, in some circumstances, anywhere in the universe. Especially with planets like Earth, this is true, because Earth is primitive. And it works with, we'll say, evil, therefore, across any part of time and space in the physical dimension. It works best in the physical and the lowest part of the astral dimension. That's it right now. It has some ties to other dimensional parts of the universe, but that's where it really has a dominance, you can say, in comparison to goodness in some areas, especially this particular galaxy. I only know of the one from what I have learned. There could be others, but I don't know of any. And maybe that's a good thing. We already have enough trouble. So someone who starts thinking in evil terms on Earth, even though this galaxy is, I mean, it's beyond our understanding of time. I mean, it's so far away. At instantaneous time levels, in other words, it takes no time, their thought can be added to by this, we'll call it group soul of evil, that has been developed by all of these evil people who exist in this faraway galaxy. And they don't have an individual soul. This is the strange thing about this. And that's going to confuse some people. They're going to say, well, if everybody that's evil really wants to have individual control and power, then how can they adopt a system and become part of it that's controlled by a galaxy that's so far away? And it isn't completely controlled. It just adds its thought. But still, how could they enter the system where they even have a group soul like an animal has? That doesn't seem to make much sense. How do they have true independence then? And the answer is they don't have independence. They actually have a commonality in the way that they think. And that's the amazing thing, is that they're able to march in step together, even though they don't know one another. And this allows them to do two things which are very strange. If we look at God's plan, we're supposed to interact together so that we build consciousness and grow closer to our Creator. But their plan is to not get rid of consciousness, but they don't want to necessarily grow it to any significant level, because that would mean to become more loving. But they do want to remain conscious while they grow in power for the sake of controlling others. And in order to do this control, they can't work completely alone. It's not possible, because they don't have, not any one of them has sufficient power on their own to do this. So they form a collective group. Yeah, they really do. And they use a group soul as their common denominator in proposing and thinking of non-creative, but somewhat, well, sometimes a creative, but most of the non-creative, but ways that have been successful in gaining dominance and control over others and using power to do it. So if someone really wants that, they can become influenced very quickly by this group soul of evil, and it literally can magnify tremendously the ways in which they may have ever thought to gain control and power over others. And we're going to talk about how that changes the person very quickly. I'll give you a hint. First of all, a person becomes extremely self-focused astrally and extremely arrogant mentally. They believe that they know everything and they can do anything because they supposedly are thinking better than others. And they, as proponents of the system, try to convince or force or both others to follow whatever their thought is, because they believe themselves in an extreme arrogance to be superior in almost any and every way possible to those who are less powerful than they are. Because after all, they do gain power, and I'm going to explain how that works. Their system is a collective, but it's not a collective of universal, like, yeah, everybody is one. It's just the opposite. It's a collective based upon like a multi-marketing system, you know, where you have a base of a large number, and the power of that base flows upward. Think of it as a big triangle, to eventually a center point, which is the leading, sometimes only temporary, evil person who has mastered the most amount in gaining power. And then it just moves down for the next couple, the next 5, the next 10, 20, et cetera, groups who have gained the most power. And they gain power by taking power from all those below them. They don't take all the power from all those below them. So there's actually this pecking order based upon who has the most power and who has the least power among all those who are in the evil, we'll call it hierarchy of power. It's not really a hierarchy of consciousness, like exists in the next kingdom beyond human. And remember that evil doesn't exist in the next kingdom. It only exists in the human kingdom, other than what's enforced onto the lower kingdoms by humans. Evil is a complete bastardization of God's thought. It's taking God's thought and applying the foibles of humanity, usually under negative circumstances such as exist on Earth, and that's where it fosters and develops itself. It can't develop itself in worlds that are enlightened enough to prevent people from falling in consciousness to the point where they seek power rather than light and goodness and the use of the power for interactions that helps others. Evil does not care about helping others. It cares about only helping itself. It will help other evil people or people who are moving in that direction to become more evil, because that's how it gains more power. But it only helps to the level that still keeps those below it enslaved by its own power. Whoa. So that's how the system works. And it's important for us to understand that system, because I know too many people who think evil doesn't exist. If you do, and if you're one of them, you need to go through an awakening, because if you don't, evil eventually will overpower you. Either you will become evil or you'll become a slave to it, which in either case, your ability to be close to your creator will be significantly diminished and hurt, maybe for many lifetimes, centuries, even millennia. We could face such prospects. It's possible. Okay, so I'm giving you the kind of thumbnails, picture here, even though I'm explaining it a lot better because we have some time. It's great. But there's a lot more that you could, I could talk for hours just about evil, but tonight it's really about power and evil, in understanding this relationship and what we can do, maybe, to make some changes in what's going on around us. Okay, so when we look at this whole process, it becomes pretty apparent that evil does have a significant agenda. It's not like, oh, well, gee, it really isn't doing anything. No, it's doing tremendous stuff. We just don't notice it because our focus is on consciousness, and power becomes secondary to that. Whereas evil's focus is on power, and consciousness is just something you got to have some of in order to get more power. Just enough. You don't want too much. And so this is a real different kind of thing. And you can say, well, how can I feel when evil is around me? Well, one thing you can do is that evil people are extremely ungrateful, extremely, and this is the important thing, unloving as a soul. They can appear to be loving, like, oh, I'm giving something to you. But what they give is always something to get in return, even if it's your servitude. And they also believe themselves to be superior to almost everybody and everything. Even the lower evil people believe that. Even they, even though they know that they have those above them in greater power, with greater power, they still think that they're so great and they know so much. Knowledge is not consciousness. Remember that. And knowledge is only of much use to evil people without consciousness, because knowledge without consciousness leads to more power and control. Knowledge with consciousness leads to God. You see how these two things are really moving in different directions. Okay, so we're running out of time for this part of the show for right now. We're going to go to a break. We're going to come back. And when we come back, I'm going to go into a lot more about all of this. Hopefully so far this is starting to make some sense. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and tonight we're talking about power and evil. And I hope that first section there helped people, even people who have read my stuff or heard other shows. I hope it kind of brought it together, because I want to move on now. That's like the basics of things, but I want to talk about some practical factors that come into play once you come to the realization that there really is evil. Some of you out there, I know, haven't reached that point yet, so I realize you're listening with a skeptical ear, so I accept that. That's okay. Nobody has to buy into anything I say. I just hope you keep listening, because that's a good thing for all of us. All right, so let me say some practical issues here. If everything I've said so far has some accuracy to it, it doesn't have to be completely accurate, I guess, for people to buy into what I'm saying. But if everything I've said has some accuracy to it, then we have to be quite concerned. Because there are people among us who may be working against us. And that is a great fear. And the worst part about this is these are not people of insignificant levels of effect on us. Because evil lives for the power and control of others, if it weasels itself into the areas of our life that it can do the most harm in and get the most from us. These areas include governing parts of our existence. They include being heads of companies and schools and anything where they have the ability to be in control. Now, does that mean that all people in those areas are evil? No. It just means that it attracts it. It's like the ultimate, you know, food for them. And so they're always looking for a way to get in there. And they get to those places by not usually doing things good. They do things bad. They use things like corruption and lying and, we'll say, greed. But greed for the sake of gaining power, not greed for the sake of just having more things. Although evil loves to have things all the time. But it will give up things to gain control over others because it knows that in the future, that will give it anything it wants. Oh, I think we have a caller online. Hello? Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
What Hi, you Niels. This is Matthew, Monica's husband.
Oh, Matthew. How are you doing? That's great to hear from you. So what's up?
Well, I just had a question. You said something about a galaxy of evil.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering.
Go ahead.
What's that?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
I was just wondering because I study astronomy. Is this a galaxy that's been photographed or seen by astronomers?
That's a good question, and I'm going to tell you something that's going to sound a little bit strange. It's beyond It's beyond the curvature of light in what we call our universe. So what that means is that it's actually older than 13.7 point some odd billion years. And that's a thing that most people don't recognize is that something, because the universe expanded at a speed faster than the speed of light at its near its inception, and it did so for a while, during that expansionary period, which is not exactly the way I understand it, but I'm saying it the way astronomers understand it. Some of the galaxies are beyond the possibility of us seeing them because they exceeded the speed of light, and the light from them has not reached us, and they're continuing to move away besides. What I'm saying is the universe is actually, in my opinion, larger than 13.7 odd light years in size. That's the size of the visible universe. And I believe that evil, and the reason I'm saying this is, and I'll explain it to you in a second, but it has to do with the correspondence of something that I do know about and have directly experienced with. And that is, evil does not want us to be able to see it. And the way it has managed to manipulate itself is to have its center to be beyond our reach, even the reach of our telescopes, the reach of everything that we could possibly do, it's beyond. And it does this very thing in the astral world. It has set up itself, its own little kingdom, you might say, in the seventh subworld, which I sometimes called by spiritual writers as the eighth sphere, where nothing in the rest of the astral world can see it. Well, oddly, there's a correspondence to that in the physical world. And so from my understandings, now what I'm telling you is a conclusionary thing. It isn't like I directly can know it or touch it. This galaxy is actually beyond our visible reach. So do you have other thoughts about that? I don't mean to say it in a way that, you know, like, oh, geez, just saying it so we can't find it. No, I think it's really true. I mean, I think that they want it that way, so we can't find them. You know, they like being in the darkness. You know.
Okay, no, I understand. I can see if it's beyond 13.1 billion light years, you can't see. I mean, I know there's tons of galaxies out there beyond that reach. That's one of them. All right, that makes perfect sense. I was just wanting to, you know, because I like astronomy, I figured if I could see it, I thought it would be interesting to look at a picture of the beast itself.
Okay,
but it looks like that's not possible.
Okay, there's another reason you won't be able to see it, and I'll try to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, from information that I've gotten, but I've never, of course, I haven't experienced this. And that is, as you know, the suns or stars of a normal galaxy eventually die out, and they're either consumed by black holes or they become black holes, and eventually the black holes join, and you have a super black hole in the middle of the galaxy. This is the way you transfer energy from this dimension of time and space into other dimensions of time and space. They don't know that part yet, but that's okay. At least they know that there's a big vacuum cleaner taking energy out of the galaxies. But evil does not function at all that way. They're almost in the kind of reverse direction. They're actually taking energy from the astral world. And so it's a very, very strange system. And their galaxy is working under different physics than what we're used to. So I just wanted to let you know that, too, since you're interested in astronomy. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we'll talk some more. Thanks for calling in. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, so let me continue on and let the rest of the listeners know that, yeah, this show sometimes gets off on science and I love astronomy. It's my I just love it. Okay, so let me continue and now talk about the practical issues that we have to face when we're talking about us living among evil folks. Now, I'm going to give you some numbers so that you can have a pretty good understanding. Of the whole world, there are only in a relatively small proportion of the population is truly in the evil dark hierarchy. It's in the thousands. It's not like even in the millions. Now you can say, well, there has to be at least a million really bad people in the world. Yeah, they're dark, but there's this sort of, you think of it as a scale from one side to the other, of intensity of darkness leading into evil. In order to be evil, you have to be seriously contemplating giving up your soul, and you have to be moving in that direction every day. You can't just stay at one place. You got to be moving in the direction of giving up your soul. You don't have to give it up, and you could have some, you can participate in evil, but you have to be moving in the direction pretty consistently to be defined as evil. So I'm giving you my definition on this scale that we just talked about we or approximately, it's going to be that we have a state of evil. So are evil people, therefore, by my definition, all soulless? No. That's the weird thing about it. I was talking to someone, I have one... we'll say a student kind of mine, a person who calls me on a regular basis about once a month or so. And his concern was, how could evil people really not have souls? How could evil people really have souls? Because wouldn't the soul want to try to interfere or stop? And the fact is, the soul doesn't have any power over the evil person. The evil person can keep the soul around as long as it wants, as long as it keeps moving more and more dark. But there becomes a point where there's too much tension between having a soul, which is kind of like bad baggage to an evil person, and an individual soul. I'm not talking about the soul of evil. And working with the soul of evil and in the soul of evil and moving more and more in that direction and still having an individual soul. Eventually, you reach a schism where you can't have both. Not because it's not allowed by the soul, the individual human soul, but because it becomes impractical because the person can't keep gaining power because they can't keep moving into the darkness of evil. So they have to eventually give up their soul to become more evil at a certain point. And each person is at a different level as far as when that happens. There's no absolute level. I don't want you to think that. It's relative to what the person is doing and has done. It's their deeds of interaction with others that determines this. Evil is a very practical kind of thing. It's not based upon whimsical notions or people's desires as much as it is, what kind of bad things have you done today? And what did you do yesterday? And what are you going to do tomorrow? So that's really what it's about. And it's difficult for us who work more in the consciousness realm and spiritual to fully comprehend this existence, because it's not what we would consider to be all that great, it sounds like. Okay, so the absolute level to become evil is that every day you got to progress. Every day, I mean, there's no slacking off. You got to really be moving more in that direction, and you're dissociated from your soul if you still have one. You're not going to be like, oh, I think I'll check out my individual human soul today and see how it's doing. No, you're dissociated. But you may not give it up because of fear. And you might say, well, wait a second. If evil wants to become more evil, and this is what this fellow that I teach every month said, if evil wants to become more evil, why does it have a problem about, you know, fear of giving up its soul? Well, because evil wants to hedge its bets. I mean, it's not playing with just anyone. Sure, if you could say its enemies are good people, but remember who its real enemy is. It's its soul and God. Well, even evil knows that if God does exist and you're going to go to battle with God over what you're going to eventually be doing, it doesn't bode well for you. So it lives in this apprehension that at some point, God's going to come in and get it. And the truth is, that's not true. God won't do that. It's so bizarre. But it lives in that fear. And it, because it's not conscious enough to understand what's really going to happen to it, that fear holds it in abeyance of completely cutting off its soul in the very beginning of this process. Most people don't. They hold on to their soul sometimes for lifetimes, can be, at least a couple. And they do it just, you know, I'll hedge my bet. I want to see how this thing's going to go for me. You know, maybe the power won't come and maybe I won't be able to. And then as they get more and more power, they start moving up their hierarchy of evil. They say, hey, I really am the greatest. I don't have to worry about God. I don't have to worry about anything. God hasn't come and got me. If God is so great and so powerful, hey, here I am. He knows I'm here, right? It hasn't done anything to me. So either God doesn't exist or it's imminent. It's some kind of imbecile God who lets me do whatever I want. Well, if it's stupid enough to do that, then screw you. I'll just do whatever I want. You could see its attitude. And it actually develops that attitude. I'm telling you, I know it's hard to believe if you're not evil. But that's the attitude it develops. And eventually it convinces itself of its own immortality because it thinks it's immortal. I mean, it actually is, and let me explain that too. We've got a lot to talk about. The practical side of this is that evil gets reinforced in its sense of power because when it finally dies from a physical body, it keeps all of its evil consciousness, it keeps all of its power, it grows in power when it goes to the afterworld, it does not ever lose consciousness upon its death, and it doesn't have to go to the monastic world to deal with its karmic mentality. It doesn't have to do anything. It pays nothing for what it does bad. And it does that for hundreds or even thousands of lifetimes. Wow! You might say, I didn't know they get away with that much. Yeah, they can. If they become a pretty advanced dark master, They can live a long, long, long time. Yeah, they give up a body, but you know what? In their next lifetime, they choose exactly who they want to be, how they're going to be born, where they're going to be born, in every circumstance. They're in control of everything. No soul doing anything. Hey, tell me that isn't cool. Now, their soul could still be connected to them in the background. Still connected for a while. Usually a couple of lifetimes or so. And then the strain gets too strong for them. And their arrogance is so great, they say, well, what do I need to keep this thing around that is just bothering the hell out of me having it? Because, you know, once in a while I can hear some kind of thing like, you got to be good or some kind of nonsense. You know, they don't want that. They don't want to hear it. They don't believe it. They hear things about God. They don't want to know about that, you know. And eventually they do voluntarily say, you know what? Goodbye. And then the soul leaves. I mean, is gone and disconnected. Now, you might say, well, why doesn't the soul just discard this poor person? And that's because souls don't give up. They're not going to give up on us until we choose to dissociate ourselves completely with them. Then the process of dissociation is over, and they will start with a new incarnate. And the chances of getting back that soul are virtually zero. That's the end of it. And the person goes on and on. Now, practical, what's the practicality of that kind of situation? What does that mean in terms of what we have to be concerned about? Well, evil people have been around for a while. They really know the ropes. Remember, they have continuity of evil consciousness. Now, unless they are beyond the second dark initiation, they don't fully remember everything about the, you know, the A sphere in between the two lifetimes. They don't fully remember that because they haven't become evil enough to get that. But they do remember all the ways to be evil and gain control and power, and they're very good at it. And this makes them very scary because they are so powerful that no normal human being has a chance to overcome them. They almost always will win in a contest of power with even spiritually disciplined people. That's the danger. They are not impotent by any stretch of the imagination. They consider us the impotent ones. And they are thinking and acting in a way which is consistent with, unfortunately, the truth. Evil people live for power and control, and they're much better at it than the vast majority of the rest of the people. This is the reason they can easily gain control over entire populations of countries. Tens of millions of people can be adversely affected by a small group of evil people, usually with a very, very dark master leader. And there's little that we can do about it on an individual scale. How do we deal then with this menace? Because they're just getting better and better at being evil from one lifetime to the next. Don't worry, by the end of the show, I'll tell you some stuff that's going to happen to them. You won't feel as bad right then as you might right now, because it sounds like, oh, we're really screwed. Now, there's way around this, but obviously, God's not going to leave us totally defenseless. But for a while, we could suffer immensely from what these people do. Now, what systems do they employ that we can recognize so we can find them, because they are virtually invisible to us? That doesn't mean that you can't really see them if you're awake, consciously awake, and you really got your act together? Sure you will. But most people aren't. And so for the vast majority of people, they give us great snow jobs, and they are terrific at convincing us that they are really there to help us. What sort of things do we want to look for? Well, if they are in politics or have anything to do with politics, they're almost certainly going to be socialists, Marxists, Maoists, Stalinists, and all kinds of others. They will be attracted to any political system that either denies the existence of God, states that God is beneath man. Now, the denying the existence of God is almost all the communists. They deny the existence of God. Okay. The rest of the pack, socialists believe that their thought is superior to God's. Now, how they come up with that, that's another story. They actually believe that their thought is superior to God. God created us human beings, so we have inalienable rights as human beings to be free and to not be under the control of others and to be brought into some kind of homogenized mass that is managed by evil people seeking control over us. And socialists are those evil people in some circumstances. And you say, well, what about the really democratic socialists that in small countries sometimes don't do such bad things? Well, the problem with it is they start off doing good, and eventually an evil person sees it as a great opportunity to get into politics, and then they're in big trouble. It never works on a big country scale, but it can work in a very small country where everybody is kind of involved in the process, and it might... Then it's just straight democratic issues that come into play and how many people are actually involved in. But those are rare, and usually they're very dangerous to have around because eventually the evil ones are looking for those to pick off. So it's still the same concept, though. Socialism still says that the government and man are above God. You can go to church, and you can do this or that, but God is secondary. And remember, when you get to communism, if you read the books, you'll understand this. Well, communism is the opposite of God. And almost all communists say God does not exist. And if it did exist, it's again, irrelevant. What did some communists say? Well, Marx and Engels said that the concept of God is the opiate of the masses. And you can't control the masses as long as they believe in God. They said that. Can't control them because they're numbified by God. But they're really not. They're awakened by God. And that's the reason you can't control it. See, they have another reason that they substitute. All right, so let's move on and talk about then. That's the government side. The government side is always, it's governments that seek absolute totalitarian control, but they may not start out that way. They could start out just by taking over various things, like socialists take over mostly forms of production, and they take over the right to exchange goods and services without their control over it. So they don't believe in free markets, if you understand what that means. And free is the bottom line word. They also believe, socialists believe, in the control of media and thought and expression of ideas. But you didn't know that. Yeah, they believe in that too, in most forms of socialism. That's the case. All right, so let's move on then. What about other areas? How can we identify evil or darkness that's moving into evil in other areas. And by the way, I'm still going to cover other shades of darkness. I realize I just covered the evil strain right now. I want to show you various strains, but we'll deal with that after we take another break, when I let your minds kind of get out of this, all these major concepts that I'm throwing out, but I'm trying to explain them. Okay. All right. So let me continue. All right. So we got other areas of life besides government that evil people love to get into. Government is really their top level, because it's controlled by what's called the First Reich, and that's where they can be most destructive. You can't be any more destructive than through government. Government can completely control and destroy people. So the government's top. But then there's education. Education could be a cool place to hang out if you're an evil person. What do people who are into education do? And they're supported by governments as well to do this. But it's just, education is its own thing still in itself. Well, people who are into evil education love to reinvent the past. So they're kind of like, you could call them creative historians. They change the past to change goodness into servitude, into ways of convincing people by how they teach about the past, ways to control others and to convince them that the past didn't really happen the way it happened, and they just reinvented. What the heck? Most people don't know the difference. They also change science. They like to teach science that shows that God doesn't exist. So they have a bent on not answering questions of contradiction in science, where proof of a creator could be almost the only answer you can come up with, and they just ignore it, or they invent some way around it. So they present science in a stilted way. Just like what Matthew called, most people don't know that the what we call the universe is much smaller than what's really out there, and that if you start trying to understand how the universe could be the way it is, there's contradictions in physics about it. Like, okay, nothing can go faster than the speed of light, except for the first few 100,000 years that the universe existed, some things are going a lot faster than the speed of light. Well, there's some problem. And then you say, well, it's because the universe is really expanding faster. Space was moving faster than the speed of light. Okay, what does that mean? Well, it means that we better get ourselves a new kind of physics, because it still doesn't work. Space is partly time, and something that is moving beyond time doesn't compute. You can't apply the mathematics they want to use to try to prove it. It's a real confusing thing. You can use a balloon to try to explain it, but when you make sure that the underside of the balloon is time, it doesn't work. You get a big, you end up with these numbers that are called infinite numbers that are impossible to manage in the known physics. But if you include extra dimensionality in God's thought, controlling energy in certain ways, it actually works. But you have to understand all that other stuff that gets into that God thing. So then you run into a problem. Oh, yeah, I know I'm talking about all that physics and science stuff. I'm probably boring you. Okay. I'll tell you what. I'll go into, like, my weekly spiel about what we're doing and talk for the next few minutes. Give your brain a rest. We'll come back, I promise you, and we'll talk about more about education, and then I'll move to other areas. Like finance, et cetera, and where you can find, how you know where the evil is, so you can find it. But I'll give you a little bit of a rest right now. I love these shows. They're much longer than it used to be, and it gives you more time to yak. And I like to yak. Yakking is fun. Okay, here's where we're at with the Phi Chi Jizuk that I've been telling you about. Another little glitch. The wonderful people we're working with, who have a great, one of the greatest facilities I've seen yet. I mean, it's a terrific, what a heck of a place they've got. Much bigger than our plant. We have a little plant, a little tiny plant to make products. But they have this huge facility. Almost, you know, like to go over and spend some time watching them make stuff and everything. I mean, it's run very much like a pharmaceutical type of operation, yet at the same time, it is truly herbal products, etc. And they made a little tiny error in one of the products, one of the ingredients that has to be made for us. It's manufactured for us. Nobody else has it, right? Okay. And the company that makes it is on the other side of the country. We've got to have it sent here through refrigerated trucks and other things like that. And everything's on its way, ready to be made, supposedly within a week to 10 days or 2 weeks at most, except for the one ingredient, which now we have to wait for. So we're delayed maybe by a week or two. I apologize for that, but, you know, we're doing the best we can. Sometimes people make mistakes. But I will tell you one thing, and that is that one of the managers of the company, she has some significant problems. She had an accident 30 years ago. She rolled over off of a highway. We're in Arizona, so there's some mountainous areas. And this was in a fairly mountainous area. She rolled over, went over the guardrail, went off the highway, and went down several hundred feet to the bottom in a vehicle. Now, she wasn't driving, but that's really not here or there. But she was severely injured, broke her back, did terrible things to her body. You know, I mean, that's a terrible. And even when they first found her, thought she was dead. They put her, as she described it, they put a blanket over her, left her there for a while, and she couldn't speak because of the accident. She was unable to speak. And she had to lay there for a while they were talking about her dead body. Scary. You know, and she was bleeding out, so she really was dying. But it turned out to be good because they saved her life. But in the process, in the last 30 years, she's developed really, really bad problems. I mean, you know, from that, and who knows? You know, we as we grow older, accumulate energy in us from self-focus, and you know about that. So that she was telling me about this just yesterday. Now, she's going to be making our tablets. She hasn't made the capsules that we have, but she's going to be making the tablets of 5-Chi-Chi-Zic. I said, listen, I'm going to go back and get some 5-Chi-Chi-Zic in capsules. You got to take a lot of these, unfortunately. I'd warned her about it. She said, will it help me? Because she's in terrible pain most of the time, severe arthritis and other damage. I mean, her spine's in like a pretzel. You know, it's been severely damaged. She's got discs that are degenerated, broken bones that really never completely healed. I mean, just a terrible mess of stuff, you know, and calcification spikes, you know, all those terrible things, that arthritic spikes, and just everything you can imagine. And in a number of parts of her body, it isn't just her back, but it's all like it's because she was so banged up. So I gave her a bag, not a bottle, but a bag of some of these capsules. I said, well, just try one time, take this amount. And after you leave here, you know, take it and see how you feel. So she went home, and she took the bunch of pills. She said, well, there's a lot of pills to take, because you're right. Yeah, it's going to be wonderful when we make these tablets, because you won't have to take anywhere near this number. But, and she took them, and about like an hour later or so, all the pain that she's lived with for 30 years went away. It just disappeared, she said. She thought she was going to feel drugged if that happened, or some sign, you know, like, oh, God, it's got to be doing something. The pain just went away, which is what I told her would most likely happen. And even better than that, she said, it's the first time she slept normally in years. And that includes having every kind of imaginable treatment, including 6 weeks ago being in the hospital, and they were doing the steroid with the anti-inflammatory injections into each one of her discs in her spine. I mean, it's really, that's a horrible thing to go through. And she has been in less pain, but it's coming back again. And she just couldn't tolerate the idea that she was going to have to live with this. And she can't. You can only go in for four of those treatments a year because they stop working. Each one is progressively less effective. And the amount of steroids are so strong, it really destroys your immune system. So you get a total of four in a year. That's the max you get. So at any rate, she used the 5-Chi Jizuk just the one time. I saw her again today. That's when we discovered the mistake, by the way. And I mean, she was like a different person. She said, this is like the miracle she has been looking for. Now, this is anecdotal looking, but it's been many dozens up to 100 people who have tried this stuff so far, and everybody's having great results with it. I mean, there are no, so far, there's nobody who said, it just doesn't work, it's a piece of crap, and forget it. That hasn't happened. Now, I think there's going to be a few people like that. Why? Because we are such individuals in the nature of our bodies. You can't make something that's going to work on every person in the world. I don't think that that's really an expectation we should have. But so if you're waiting for it, believe me, it's worth waiting for. And you know, the only thing I can tell you that I regret is because of the prices of everything that we're dealing with, we had to raise the overall cost by a few dollars. There was no way around it. Our costs are just extreme on this, and we're not making anywhere near what a normal, quote-unquote, dietary supplement company makes. It's a very small profit margin. But we're doing this as service. We're not doing this because, gee, we all want to be, you know, millionaires. We just want to make something that will really be of help. And I think this stuff will help many, many people. I've used it. Everybody I know around me has used it and got about the same results. Great results. Okay, so you ready to come back? Let's continue to talk about education. Besides the sciences that I make sure God doesn't pop into, and the redoing of history, what are the other areas that are signs that there's darkness afoot? Well, they don't invite creative thinking. There's no creative thinking. So on a public scale, particularly if you're talking about education, and that's where they usually head for, they look to have their jobs protected by not being able to get fired. We'll get to that part in business, the unions. But also, they try, unfortunately, to follow a plan of imparting knowledge, because remember, darkness is about knowledge, not consciousness. And so they're not seeking to help people to think more or better. Rather, they're doing the opposite. They're trying to impart only knowledge, and if people spill it back and prove by some kind of arbitrary test score, et cetera, that this is it. Now, this is not necessarily a only Democratic or Republican or some kind of thing. It's not labeled that way in their avenues of expression. It's just how they teach. And then so it's part of the educational process. And people that are dark want to be in that sphere of not helping people to question and think. And so they don't invite that in their classrooms if they're teachers, or they don't invite it in the schools if they're administrators. They are the opposite of that. They certainly aren't in the, you know, we'll call it the experimental realm of allowing virtually anything new to be tried. They're not really into that. They're not Montessorians, as an example, if you know what that system of teaching from Switzerland is. Okay, so let's move on because I want to go fast here because we got a lot to cover. Okay. What about banking? What about military? What about anything dealing with communications? This is the third ray itself. That's where they really love to hang out. The majority of people who are really dark, if they can't get into the government for some reason, love the military, and sometimes they join the two. Many, many military leaders are also dictators, eventually, if they can be, and vice versa. So you'll see leaders of some of these communist countries and other places like that, you know, they got their uniform on because they're also in the military. So they'll join the two. The first and third rates are very powerful, and they bring them together. And they love to do this, so watch out for that. Now, but besides that, let's talk about it away from government, because I think we got the government covered. And how do they express themselves? Well, money becomes the main focus of attention. And in terms of communication, communication is never thought as a means of getting people together, but as a means of controlling how people communicate with each other. So they love to control media and the expression of media. They love to control news the best and the propagation of news. They usually eventually control whole newspapers and radio and television stations. And if they can't gain control over those through money, which is one way of power, they gain control over it through legal maneuvers. Well, you really can't talk about that. You can't write about that. So they love to get rid of freedom of expression. And then in addition, the third ray, in terms of the military expression, comes in that they like to have wars that they are completely in control of, and that gives them more control over taxing and more control over other populations of people, that gives them some kind of way of manipulating societies outside of their own. So they don't like internal wars as much as making wars on other nations. They usually deplore civil war once they have good control over a country, but before they get control over a country, they love civil wars. So civil wars are real popular if they're not the in crowd in the government. Very out of popularity if they are in. They don't want a civil war then, because a civil war doesn't help them. Occasionally, a small insurrection helps them, because then they can take more authority and control over others. So small insurrections, they don't mind, but big civil wars are not helpful. Okay, and these are all the evil people now. We're talking about the ones that really function at the higher levels of darkness. I'm going to get to the lower levels, believe me. I'm not done. Okay, so what about people in the field of art and the expression of artistic factors, even people who might be herbalists, because I'm kind of in that thing. That's kind of an art thing. In those expressions, they promote all of the other kinds of darknesses in the field outside of art. So their art is an expression of the darkness, making the darkness into something good that others are doing throughout the society that they exist in. They present documentaries that are slanted if they're into that type of artistic expression. But most of the time, the expression of art in a more, we'll say, global kind of art, which could be anything from music to you name it, is done in a way which excites the passions of people without exciting the goodness in people. So passion over goodness. Let's use music as an example. Music that is not necessarily having much beauty to it, but gets people to move around a lot, sometimes in erratic motion, because you see, now you say, oh, now he doesn't like people jumping around and dancing that way. Now, I'm just using this as an example, because that is an area we have to be aware that people with power may be actually, you know, into hip-hop or into doing, you know, the non-musicality of some mediums. I shouldn't really label it for something like hip-hop, because there's some things that are fine. And I'm afraid I was going to almost say a whole bunch of things that I shouldn't have said. Because it isn't about the medium per se. It's about whether it has any beauty to it. And beauty is what helps us to improve our senses rather than to decrease our senses through its loudness, or decrease our senses through incoherent jumping around without there being any real connection with other people. So I like dancing. I think dancing is great. There's all kinds of dancing, and all those forms could be great. But some forms are not real beautiful, and some forms are actually ugly. And you have to use your own judgment about this. But that's where you find the darkest side, as far as the fourth type of expression of darkness and evil. And if they gain real substantial fame, they usually do outrageous things. And those outrageous things then other people follow into a kind of ugly kind of life. Some of the outrageous things involve abuse of drugs, abuse of their bodies, abuse of others. You know, this is all part of the process that they do, if you follow me. Okay? So, let's continue on to a further example of this whole situation. All right? In the areas of science, what I said about education science is even more so with an arrogance of science for the darkest of people to become heads of research institutions and research laboratories, and also to be involved in the technology joined, the third way joined, with the science in producing some types of things that oftentimes deny, again, the existence of God. So here we see then another sign of this, and it's probably abused the most in the pharmaceutical area. Some pharmaceutical companies are run strictly for profit motive, do not have conscience about the cost and abuse sometimes of the products they produce, both. Sometimes it would be better if they cost more so people wouldn't use them as much. And are not concerned about searching for the areas of most help, but rather looking for the areas of most profit. And also fame. They seek fame. Fame is a big deal in science. A lot of people don't realize. They think it's all about in the fourth ray, where fame is the biggest deal. Well, fame in the fourth ray kind of go hand in hand. And unfortunately, then people, as I said, use it to make bad examples of themselves. But in science, it's not so much about making bad examples in terms of some of their lifestyle issues, as much as it is about the arrogance of not looking at the harm that whatever they create may do. They're only looking at, well, it helps this, but it may kill a lot of people doing that, you know. And so this is where the problems come in. And again, a high level of arrogance is a clear indicator there. And there are companies that do this. There's individuals that do this. And people that get into it are, again, it's power and control. That's all they're aiming for, power and control. What about in the religious community? The religious community, the churches that use the church, the pulpit, instead of trying to get people closer to God, they're trying to get people closer to controlling them and to use them as an injunctive force for controlling even more of society. They're into collectivism in terms of how God is supposedly related to people. You can't be accepted by God in these churches unless you follow as a group the pastors or the whoever is heading the church and their elders or whatever view of the world and do what they say is the correct avenues for living. I think a religion can be a very good force, a very good thing, but it has to be joined with consciousness, and people have to have an understanding of God as God being a great being, and we are here to co-participate. That makes sense to me. But following someone who says, well, you know, white people are really bad, or black people are really bad, or this people are really bad, that to me is not God. That's evil. Or anything else that causes someone to not experience God in a direct way by telling people, well, you can't be saved if you believe in salvation. You can't be saved unless you work together with this church and certain socialists and government and other people, you know. Our president says that, by the way. He believes that you can't be saved unless you follow the government and his church's ideas. It's called collectivism, and it's a strong part of socialism. As a matter of fact, socialism uses churches oftentimes as a means to collectivize their society. It's one of the ways to get at people. So anyone who's telling you that, if you go into a church like that, maybe it's time to find another church or a different religion or whatever. I don't know. You know, I know something to question, because is God really like that? Is that what God's about? I don't think so. Now, could there be a religion of collectivism? Is there such a thing? No, because God wants us to be free. Collectivism is what the group soul of evil does, right? Remember that from an hour ago? Yeah, that's what it's all about. That's what they're about. And we don't realize it. Remember Reverend Wright from a year or two ago? And listen to this guy. He is the hallmark of communism applied to religion. It's so weird, because most people don't know that when communism could not succeed in South America, I heard this on Glenn Beck, by the way, when communism couldn't, but it's true, I checked on it myself, couldn't succeed in South America, they came up with a great plan. They'll allow it to become, I hear there's a call online, I'll take that caller in a second, they'll allow it to become a collective kind of church, where the only way you can get close to God is to become part of the socialistic, communistic methods. So it was pretty crazy. But that has come to us now. It's part of our system in some parts of the United States. Okay, who's online? Hi.
Oh, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I'll be honest with you. I'm struggling to pose a intelligent question because I would say, honestly, fascination of your program with so many attachments to religion, to practicality of life, conscious and subconscious. So if you can forgive me, I will try to express myself the best way I can, but I'm truly inspired by your journey of thoughts. And I guess the question has to do with evil, which you talked previously, religion, and how all of this can complement each other with helping a formulation and I would say transformation from subconscious to the conscious process. I'm sure I asked too many questions in one, but
no,
I
think it's a great question. Just go ahead. You don't feel like you're speaking out of turn. It's fine. You're doing great. I just encourage you.
Okay, thank you. At least I'm honest. And I'm feeling you created this freedom of choice and the freedom of thought. So I guess the question is how religion can be a very successful bridge in transformation between being subconscious and to realize your consciousness.
Okay, let me tell you. And this is, of course, for your benefit as well as all of our listeners, and it's a great question. Thank you for asking it. Religion can be a bridge to higher consciousness through charity and giving. One of the great aspects of most religions that aren't on a collective scale, but are on a more individual relationship with God, is that most of them encourage charity, and they do so not because the person giving is going to necessarily receive something from God, but because the giving is giving a part of themselves that is a part of God to others. And this is so big. I mean, this is really what soul wants. So what I'm talking about is like a universal soul concept that has permeated the majority, the vast majority of religions in this world. Not every religion is like that, and every religion is even taught like that, even if the general religion does teach it. But it is an exceptionally good thing, and religions do this better than any other part of our society. So fostering that element in itself is a great thing. Let me go into a couple others, because I think that's only one of the areas that religion can be a benefit. Religion can be helpful because there's some people that are not yet, we'll say, at a place where they can truly understand or find their creator through just sitting and meditating or reading something I've written. Because the stuff, they're just not, that's not their where their mind is right now. Their mind wants to hear from other people, experience tangibly other people having the same kind of experience they're seeking in a relationship with God. Religion can give those people, and they may be in the vast majority right now in most countries, those people, a lot of that some people can get because they have enough consciousness that they can say, well, I don't quite need that for my religion, but they do. And so religion can provide that, and it has a great following from that standpoint. And then third is that a religion actually can educate people in a way of, we'll say, even though it's usually slanted based upon their belief system, but it still can educate people about the general principles of what a God might be like. Not all religions do this either, but some do, and the ones that do introduce some then increased, we'll say, levels of consciousness that allows those people who are attending to consider, even beyond what the religion itself teaches, a even more fundamental and closer relationship with who they perceive to be their creator. So religion can do all those things, and it allows people to find the religion that works best for them, because that's the other thing that's great about religion is there's so many of them. I mean, even though we could say there's Christianity, how many different ways is that religion expressed, including, unfortunately, some ways that are kind of dark, like I talked the collectivist way. But that's a great thing, too. You have the selection of so many different possibilities. I hope I answered your question.
You answered it beautifully, and I do not want to take much of air time and leave time for other callers. I just will make my quick personal comments to complement what you just said. It just happened that I came from Eastern Europe, and our religious perception is quite different from Western European countries, and of course dictatorship and some other restrictions put this under tremendous stress and limitations. saying that, however, I would say that after collapse of the communism, my personal shock was relating to the witnessing how much religion took place in people's soul. Churches not only being opened, they're not only welcome to visit for their beauty and their touristic interest, but for thorough and very greatly, I would say, craving necessity for local people, for citizens. And these churches are filled with the young and old, with people with different different philosophical orientations. So it is almost like a religion in a revolution stage of it. So I just wanted to compliment to what you're saying, because the meaning of it sometimes not always realized and not always so clear in the United States, simply because we're so far away. But that's one thing. The other connection I personally have is with the education which you mentioned, but frankly with the music and artistic part of our lives, because they wouldn't be able to exist without any religion, because all the source and, of course, emotions and beauty and depth, this is all greatest food for composers and artists and painters. So on this note, I wanted to thank you very much for this program. Especially, I see tremendous symbolism because of tomorrow's event of 9/11 tragedy. So again, I thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and thanks for calling in. Okay, so let me try to continue on. And that was a very thoughtful caller, and I appreciate those kinds of calls. I appreciate all calls. Even if you don't like what I say, that's fine. You can call in. I have no problem with that. All right, so let me continue. The last thing is about business and the elements of business. And one of the ways that darkness invades business usually is to control the overall, we'll say, free market, and to destroy free market systems. Free market can be destroyed by corrupt unions, not unions, period, but corrupt unions. And unfortunately, unions are great places for those in power to really wield a lot of it and to convince people that they're doing great things for them while they're doing terrible things to both the businesses that they are involved in, and also, unfortunately, sometimes for the poor people who don't understand what the leaders of their unions are doing. Good unions are unions where there's give and take, where the marketing collectively between the employees and the employer is towards the improvement overall of the free market and the ability for that company to make the most amount of money but have it fairly shared among everybody. There's nothing wrong with that kind of union. The bad unions are the ones that are corrupt, that the people at the top are there for only controlling and taking control over others, and they end up also with most of the union money, and they also end up making deals that end up destroying the businesses and even the union itself in the long run. That's a whole longer story that I kind of going to run out of time in explaining, because it's been a fairly long show. So let me just say that unions that are public unions that are self-defeating, because the amount of money that the pensioners got and others in those situations far exceeds what the union can deliver, and then eventually everybody gets hurt. Only one generation of people ever survive in that, and everybody else gets hurt. And the promises they make never get fulfilled because of corruption. The corruption is also in the model that the people are using. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's not very, very good. Where else does business have its failings with darkness? Well, large, big companies that are monopolistic are terrible. We have an anti-monopoly law which should be used appropriately when companies are interfering in free commerce. If you believe in a free market system, then you really have to make sure that you don't have monopolies because it destroys the free market. So both the government and every other element in our society should be enforcing anti-monopolistic situations and preventing companies from interfering with other companies who want to compete with them in fair situations. May the best company and products and services be the winner. That's what it's about. Competition provides for freedom and vice versa. If you see darkness coming from companies doing the reverse, then you know that the people who are running those companies have darkness in them or evil. And if they're really doing it a lot and they're really corrupt, or if the union leaders are really corrupt, they're evil. That's it. Now, let me go through the scale that I wanted to finish, and I'll try to give you a perspective on this. And that is that if you're really looking at the scale of evil from the very worst and then moving back to just the different levels of darkness, in each step, I'm going to go from the worst. We've already seen, and we've covered that part of it. Each step back to the soul is a step in a direction of inclusiveness, being, we'll say, open-minded, and humility. So there's more and more of that, although it might not be very much, in people who are dark but not evil. You can see some level of it in them, some willingness to say, I made a mistake, so sorry, I certainly don't want to do that again, or I didn't tell the truth about this. Let me correct that and say that this is where I went off and started making up stuff. Because those people, while they may have done terrible things, and may continue to over time, they may a COPA moment is a benefit. And then beyond that, if they really do follow up with humility and show that they are trying to do better, at times, they are not evil. Evil doesn't do that. Evil only admits that it made a mistake to gain more control and power, and then the mistake is always second-handed or some kind of straw-man argument that they produce, which almost is never really an admission of anything. So if you're really finding that people are having some level of humility, some level of honesty, some level of not being fully engrossed in power and control, then they can't be fully evil. And there's some scale of it going back all the way to being good. Now, what is goodness? Well, goodness is just creating more of God. Goodness, the word good comes from God. And it means that those people then aren't even on the darkness scale. That doesn't mean they don't occasionally do things that are dark. I'm just saying they're not on the scale that I'm trying to create. And this darkness scale probably leads up to the point where a person is moving more towards being a soul than becoming a person detached from a soul. So that's where the darkness scale begins, right at that schism point. And people that are giving up more and more of their soul, even if they're not doing real bad things, are on the road of darkness. What produces that? Well, certainly the misuse and abuse of any kind of drug, the lack of concern and care for anybody, but especially anyone they interact with, that their interactions are usually hostile and provocative, at least, and in a minimum, and oftentimes are demanding and expressive of selfishness. Just self-focus is the general problem. And so that's what motivates people who are on the path of darkness and those who are on the path of light. What motivates them is service to others, a sense of responsibility that goes beyond themselves, where they look to what's really going on and what's important, and they can see that God's more important than they are. And their issues about themselves are all issues, usually, about self-absorption, arrogance, believing they're always whatever they think is right, and just a willingness or unwillingness to interact in any way that benefits anyone other than themselves. So their interactions are virtually nil. Well, that's it. We're out of time for right now. I hope this show has meant something for you. And until next week, this has been Niles McClower for Why Life Is.